Thank you again for joining the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States' annual economic briefing. My name is Leslie Kimball. I'm Chief of Communications for Discus and Responsibility.org, and it's a pleasure to welcome everyone today. I'd like to introduce our speakers. Chris Swanger, who's President and CEO of the Distilled Spirits Council and Responsibility.org. David Osgo, Distilled Spirits Council Senior Vice President of Economic and Strategic Analysis, otherwise known as our Chief Economist. Christine Lacasio, Distilled Spirits Council Chief of Public Policy. And Dr. Sonnet Beneker-Hart, President and Founder of Koval Distillery in Chicago. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Swanger.
Hi, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for joining us. Of course, we all wish we were all together in New York like we were last year, and we certainly recognize, you know, that 2020 has been a unique time and an anxious time for all of us, and it certainly has been a unique time for our industry. Certainly, the pandemic and tariffs have been crushing to the U.S. hospitality industry. But we've also seen in 2020 market modernizations, and those modernizations, if we can make some of those permanent, will be great for consumer convenience. So first and foremost, thank you again for joining, and we hope everyone is staying safe and healthy. And for the highlights for our 2020 economic overview, the U.S. revenue growth for U.S. distilled spirits were up 7.7%, and U.S. volume growth for U.S. distilled spirits were up 5.3%. This is the 11th consecutive year of market share gains for distilled spirits. Of course, as I mentioned, the tariffs have been very, very destructive and have a massive curtail on U.S. exports. We are optimistic, however, and hopeful, and Christine will talk about this momentarily, you know, with the incoming Biden administration and reset with relationships with the EU. We do hope in due course these tariffs will be resolved. And certainly there was a great uneven economic impact on, thanks to COVID, unfortunately, on the U.S. hospitality industry. But as I mentioned at the very beginning, the new marketplace modernizations, thanks to many governors and state legislatures around the country, we believe if some of these are made permanent, can really be a part of the economic engine to help restaurants and bars and taverns and craft distilleries to ultimately recover. So with that, just very, very top line, in terms of 2020, of course, if you all recall, our industry was very, very pleased with the passage of the Craft Beverage Modernization Tax Reform Act. This legislation was first introduced and passed in 2017, and pleased to report that Congress made these tax cuts permanent, and that has been a great economic lifeline, particularly for craft distilleries around the country. And now that Congress has made that permanent, it gives predictability for distilleries around the country. Certainly, the COVID-19 economic relief measures have helped boost the hospitality businesses during this tough time. Cocktails to go, which has really been a new phenomenon over the last year, 33 states have adopted cocktails to go. In Iowa and Ohio have made them permanent, and that's a focus for Discus in 2021. Pickup delivery measures also for on and off premise have been very, very helpful. And this year, as a result of the pandemic, 8 states have adopted direct shipping to consumers for intrastate direct shipping. And in those states, it's been an economic lifeline for the distilleries in those states. Let me say one thing about direct shipping to consumer. Certainly over the past year, the pandemic has certainly accelerated e-commerce platforms for our industry. great kudos to platforms like LibDib and Drizzly and Reserve Bar. They have been fantastic, and all within the three-tier system. Certainly, that has brought direct-to-consumer shipping to the forefront, and this is something that we're very, very invested in. We're very committed to the three-tier system. Let me just say that the three-tier system has been the foundation for the success of our industry, the proper regulatory controls. So, and we do believe direct shipping to consumer is a platform to really evolve the three-tier system that can make the three-tier system even stronger. And in April of 2020, the state of Kentucky adopted a direct-to-consumer shipping legislation, and we're very, very pleased to that. So we're committed to this, and Christine will talk about that a little bit more. So again, 2020 was a unique year for our industry with significant market modernizations, significant challenges, and we very much appreciate y'all being here at the briefing. Christine, over to you.
Thanks, Chris, and good morning, everyone. So I'd like to start off by talking about trade and the impact of tariffs on the spirits industry over the past couple of years. But first, I'd like to take a look at, just as a reminder and to put this into historical context, the spirits industry has really benefited from duty-free trade, in particular between the United States and the EU, that has been in place for over two decades, from 1997 through June of 2018, when the first tariffs were, retaliatory tariffs were imposed. And that duty-free access really benefited the industry on both sides of the Atlantic. Next slide. But over the past couple of years, with various trade disputes that have nothing to do with the spirits industry, unfortunately, the spirits industry, was caught in the middle of a couple of these disputes. And so in June of 2018, we faced the first round of tariffs, which were imposed on all American whiskey exports to the EU, again, going from 0% to 25%. It's a huge increase. In October of 2019, again, and related to another dispute that has nothing to do with the industry, the U.S. imposed a 25% tariff on single malt Scotch whiskey, single malt Irish whiskey from Northern Ireland, and cordials and liqueurs from Germany, Ireland, Italy, Spain, and the U.K. And then in November of 2020, the EU imposed tariffs on additional categories of American spirits, 25% on rum, brandy, vodka, and vermouth. And then just a couple of weeks ago, the U.S. Decided to impose tariffs on additional categories, high-valued cognac and other great brandies from France and Germany that just went into place on January 12th. And then around the corner, the other thing is that the EU's 25% tariff on American whiskey is automatically scheduled to double to 50% in June of 2021 if these various disputes are not resolved by that time. So let's look at what the impact of these tariffs have been. So we thought we would just take a decade in review to show how global spirits and American whiskey exports had been growing. And so you look at it, if you look at it just, and I should back up to say that this data is all U.S. government data. It's from the U.S. International Trade Commission official data. We have data on 2020 through November, which we have projected out through the end of the year. So total over the past decade, American global U.S. spirits exports increased by an amazing 26.7%. I think it's fair to say that absent the imposition of tariffs, that number would have been higher than 26.7%, because as you see in 2018, when the tariffs were imposed, you see a sharp decline. And so comparing 2020 to 2018, total U.S. spirits exports, this is global, declined by 22.8%. And American whiskey, again, comparing 2020 to 2018, were down 28.9% global American whiskey exports. Now, looking specifically at the EU, just to say that American whiskey accounts for 61.3% of all of our exports. So American whiskey is a key category for the U.S. spirits producers. And the EU accounted for 52% of all American whiskey exports go to the EU alone. So it's a critical, critical market. And many, many craft distillers that are looking to export look first to the EU as their first export market that they choose. But as this graph shows, American whiskey exports to the EU and the UK were on were increasing over the past decade, and American whiskey to the EU declined by 38% comparing 2020 to 2018, and to the UK decreased by 53%. Next slide. So 41 states exported U.S. spirits in 2020, and 36 states exported American whiskey in 2020. Next slide, please. So this, we wanted to share this information with you just so you're aware that, you know, we have many craft distillers that are involved in exporting U.S. spirits and American whiskey. So it's not just a one or two state issue. It is a United States issue that impacts small companies and small distillers and medium distillers across the United States. Next slide. Turning on the import side, as I mentioned, in October of 2019, the U.S. imposed a 25% retaliatory tariff on single malt Scotch whiskey. And you see how Scotch whiskey over the past decade had actually increased the value of imports of Scotch whiskey total increased by 94% up until 2019. And then the tariffs were imposed and we saw a decline in just 1 year. And again, this is all Scotch whiskey, a decline of 37%. Now, we don't have a way to analyze the import data to isolate specifically the impact on single malt Scotch whiskey, which is the only category within the entire Scotch whiskey category that is subjected to tariffs. But still, looking at this from a broad perspective, you see that the 25% tariff, you know, is having a significant impact on Scotch whiskey imports into the United States. And then looking just briefly at liqueurs and cordials, again, as I mentioned, a 25% tariff was imposed on liqueurs and cordials from five countries. And we see a huge decline there. While those imports had been relatively steady over the past decade, you see just in 1 year, the decline there of 40% in the value of those products from those particular countries. So as Chris mentioned, and before we talk just briefly about legislative priorities, you know, we do have a new administration that, you know, has a new approach towards trade, and we are hopeful. And we have seen some comments from some key officials that they are looking to solve these disputes and hopefully reset the relationship with some of our allies. And so we are working collaboratively with our counterparts in the EU, as well as our wholesaler and retail partners in the United States, to urge the administration as well as the European Commission to get to a resolution on this. And now that the UK is no longer part of the EU, to also work out a solution with the UK so that American whiskey exports to the UK will have that 25% tariff lifted as well. So we're hoping for a resolution where all these tariffs can be suspended as soon as possible to give them an opportunity to negotiate some resolution to these unrelated trade disputes. So we remain hopeful there, and we'll continue to urge both sides to solve this sooner rather than later. On the legislative priorities for 2021, just briefly wanted to talk about, as I already mentioned, our priorities in terms of securing an immediate suspension of the tariffs on all distilled spirits. Of course, the hospitality industry, and we want to continue to do whatever we can at the federal level. If there's an additional COVID relief bill that would provide some relief for the restaurants and bars, you know, they are a critical partner for the spirits industry. And we will do, you know, what we can to help support any legislation there that provides some relief there, such as the Restaurants Act, if that is indeed reintroduced in this legislative session. On the state side, David Osgo, our chief economist, will talk a little bit about this, but a growing category is spirits ready to drink products. And so from a policy perspective, we will certainly work to ensure that any legislation that deals with spirits-based RTDs treats them fairly and equitably relative to RTDs that are made from other types of alcohol. We will continue to push for the repeal of bans on Sunday sales in key states, particularly Texas is an important priority state as well. And this is really just to ensure that consumers have convenience in their shopping. And then additionally, we will be working to defeat tax threats, because I think we can all agree that now is not the time to be taxing small businesses at this critical time. And on the Pennsylvania side, we'll continue to push for outlet expansion. We know that outlet density with regard to spirit stores is well below the national average. And so, you know, again, consumers should have convenience. And it appears that in Pennsylvania, maybe they're being underserved in terms of spirits outlets. And then looking at, you know, as Chris mentioned, some marketplace innovations that occurred in 2020, I want to just look a little bit more into Cocktails to Go. It really was an interesting innovation that occurred over the course of 2020. 33 states and DC allow Cocktails to Go in some form. And we are working very closely with our restaurant partners. We know that, you know, the passage of the temporary permission of Cocktails to Go from restaurants and bars really was a lifeline that helped a lot of these small businesses stay afloat during the pandemic. And so we are working in various states to ensure that these measures are at a minimum expanded, but preferably made permanent, because they have worked very well. And we know that at least 18 states have already filed bills to do just that. And we're also working as part of a hospitality recovery coalition with our restaurant partners to urge that those measures be enacted as soon as possible. And then finally, on direct-to-consumer, we have a map here that shows that, you know, there are variations in what states permit in terms of direct-to-consumer for spirits. We know that, you know, during the pandemic in particular, many craft distillers were cut off from their customers due to the tasting room closures as a result of COVID-19. Many states enacted temporary measures to address that. And so we know that direct-to-consumer is becoming an economic lifeline to many producers, as well as many craft producers, as well as other suppliers in the industry. But not only that, increasingly, I think one thing that this past year has shown us is that consumers are really demanding more convenience. And so we know that consumers, you know, are pushing for this as well as part of a market modernization. And so with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Sonat Berniker-Hart to talk more about the craft distiller experience in 2020 with related to tariffs and direct to consumer. Sonat, over to you.
Thank you very much, Christine. I appreciate it. I own and operate Koval Distillery. I serve as its president. We started in 2008 as the first distillery in Chicago since the mid-1800s. We make organic whiskeys, gins, specialty spirits, and we're winners of over 100 international awards and accolades. But I have a unique perspective because in addition to having our distillery, we are exported to about 55 export markets. And we also own and operate a consulting company where we've educated 3,500 people in the art of distilling from all over the world, and in particular in the United States. And we've set up over 200 craft distilleries for others. And so we're in direct communication with a lot of people involved in this industry. Next slide. And I think we can skip over that slide as well. Get right into the negative impact. So I would say that from a craft perspective, and particularly my perspective, we rely largely on the on-premise to promote our products, to reach out to consumers, to have the bartenders say, hey, you should try this local brand. And the on-premise has clearly been affected during the pandemic, and that affects us quite directly. In addition to that, we're highly affected by tourism and tourism patterns, because we also rely on people coming to our distilleries to find out about us, to experience what we have to offer, what makes us different. And to do that, they need to be able to come into the distillery. So as you can see here on my slide, that at least in Chicago in particular, we've been completely closed to indoor activities with our tasting room since March 17th, 2020. We only recently opened again on January 25th, so just this week, which provided us with little avenue to build a brand on premise throughout this pandemic. In addition, I would say that craft distilleries generally depend on their tasting rooms or their bars for revenue. To about 20 to 80% of sales come from these outlets. You have to think a lot of these are small distilleries in little towns, some in large towns, but they often rely on not a distribution model primarily for their revenue, but actually a model in which people come in and try their products in their tasting rooms, which have not been open. In addition to that, Koval in particular has been dramatically affected because in recognizing the importance of a tasting room and bar, we invested $1.5 million in our bar and tasting room and visitor center that we plan to open. We planned to open it during the pandemic. It did not open, and it has not opened yet due to pandemic concerns. Tourism, as I said, is incredibly important for craft distillers. Pre-pandemic in 2019, Koval hosted nearly 15,000 people at the distillery for tours alone. This does not include people walking in and coming by sort of off the street and locals. These are really people who came for tours specifically. And over 50% of the people that come to our tours come from outside of Illinois. In 2020, the number of people that came for tours was zero. Measures that can help craft brands recover include direct consumer shipping and cocktails to go. Finding remedies for the situation is incredibly important because a lot of these family businesses, small craft distilleries, have been holding on, by a thread throughout the pandemic in a very different climate for liquor sales as well, which has shifted during the pandemic largely to online sales. And with, while there's a boom in online sales, their craft brands do not have the marketing budgets to pay for clicks in the way that that other brands might. So next slide. In addition to all of the problems related to the pandemic, lack of tourism, lack of on-premise, craft brands have been also hard hit by the tariffs. Koval in particular, we had our exports increasing 25% every year because of our exports. Europe was a very strong and growing market for us that we were investing a lot in, and we were seeing great returns. Exports have decreased 60% due to tariffs. And the cost to do business abroad has also increased at the same time by about 15%. This is largely because we have to eat the cost of the tariffs ourselves to maintain a competitive shelf price abroad. The tariffs have also negatively impacted what was a real growing interest and appreciation of American whiskey. We were seeing so much more interest. People were asking more about it. There were so many more events in which we were getting invited to because American brands were really on the minds of consumers. And obviously these tariffs and the decrease in sales and interest in these brands because of the tariffs have affected things dramatically. Next slide. The long-term consequences. Given all of the complications of the pandemic, coupled with the financial burdens of the tariffs, American brands, and particularly craft brands with smaller budgets, are going to have a difficult time competing abroad and at home. So it's my hope that we can come up with some measures to improve the situation. Thank you. And I am going to pass this on to the chief economist, David Osgo.
Well, thank you so much, Sonnet, and good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here before you all again. Why don't we go to the next slide? What I'd like to do is talk about industry growth, just how the spirits industry grew in 2020, delve into a little bit of our market share. Now, when we look at our market share, we measure ourselves against what we view as the competition, namely beer and wine. Talk about what some of the growth drivers were in 2020, get into some category performance. And then as Christine alluded to, I'd like to talk about the developing market for spirits-based ready-to-drink products. And then I'll get into some coming attractions from the Distilled Spirits Council. Next slide. So 2020 was truly a unique year. It was a unique year for the world. It was a unique year for the United States. And it was certainly a unique year for the distilled spirits industry. Now, when I'm talking here, I'm going to be talking explicitly about U.S.-based sales, U.S.-based shipments. So when we look at our total revenue, we look at supplier gross revenues. Supplier gross revenues in 2020 in the U.S. were up 7.7 percentage points. That's a gain of around $2.2 billion, up to about $31.2 billion for total supplier sales. So we saw very, very rapid growth. This is probably the fastest we've grown revenue-wise in the last 40 years or so. Next slide. We also measure ourselves in terms of case sales. We look at the number of 9-liter cases. And in 2020, volumes were up 5.3 percentage points to over 250 million 9-liter cases. Now, to put that into perspective, in the last 10 years or so, we'd sort of gotten into a groove of growing volumes by around 2.5 percentage points each year. So the 5.3% growth rate is almost double that. And in the 20 years that I've been doing this, I think in the early 2000s, we had a growth rate of about 4.1%. So the 5.3% growth rate is truly phenomenal. But I'm going to put that in context here later on. Next slide. Now, we also like to measure ourselves in terms of market share vis-a-vis beer and wine. So when we look at our market share as measured by revenues, supplier revenues, we find that our market share grew from 37.8% up to 39.1% of total supplier revenues. Now, to put that into perspective, each point of market share is worth around $800 million. So by gaining 1.3 points in 2020, it means that of the $2.2 billion we enjoyed in revenue growth, about $1 billion of that came from gains in market share. Next slide. We also measure in terms of volume. Now, obviously, if we compared ourselves to beer and wine, beer would have a dominant market share. They'd be over 90% of the total market if you just measured raw gallons. But we know that that's not how people enjoy our beverages. So we convert everything into standard drinks. So a standard drink for beer is 12 ounces. For spirits, it's an ounce and a half. And for wine, it's 5 ounces. Making that conversion, we find that we grew our market share from 36.3% up to 37.2% of total industry volume. So again, each point of market share is worth around 6.7 million cases to the distilled spirits industry. So we grew total case volume by over 12 million cases. Around 6 million of those cases came from gains in market share. Next slide. Now, as I said, I'd like to put that growth, that phenomenal growth, into context. Obviously, the bars and restaurants were largely closed. So we look at two different channels. We look at the off-premise, which is grocery stores, package stores, and whatnot, and on-premise, which is bars and restaurants. When we look at how sales grew in the off-premise channel, you've probably heard a number of really, really phenomenal reports from either AC Nielsen or IRI talking about just amazing growth rates. And in fact, when I look at the IRI scanner data, which is a very good measure of off-premise sales, we see that in the 52 weeks ending the last week of December, so basically 2020, volumes grew by 16.3 percentage points. That's for the full 52-week period. However, if we just look at the last 12 weeks of the year, well, in fact, that growth rate decelerated fairly rapidly down to about 9.8 percentage points. And if we look at the last 4 weeks, so essentially the month of December, the growth rate declined even further down to 6.6%. Essentially, what happened is, you'll all recall back in March and April of this year, when we all first started quarantining, there was a run on grocery stores. There was a run on everything. Remember the paper towel shortage? I was amazed. In my own grocery store, they're actually rationing chicken. Now, whoever thought that we would be rationing chicken in the United States? Well, spirits was really no different. People were stocking up. They didn't want to have to go out a lot. Everybody was very, very fearful about catching the virus. So they were stocking up. that's when we saw some just amazing growth rates back during March and April. You know, sales volumes, sales revenues at the retail level anyway, were up 30, 40, 50, 60%. Well, that's because people were largely stocking up. Well, just like everything else, as time wore on and people got more accustomed to being in their homes, as people had stocked up already, those really amazing growth rates slowed dramatically throughout the year. Next slide. One of the things we like to do every year is look at how we grew by price point. We divide the world into four different price point categories, very broad: value brands, premium, high-end premium, and super premium, the most expensive products. Well, when we look where all of our growth came in 2020, obviously value brands were flat. Premium brands generated about $650 million in new supplier revenues. High-end premium was up around 700, but super premium was near $900 million in new growth. So as a result, growth in super premium brands really accounted for around 40% of our total industry revenue growth. Next slide. Now, let's talk about what we saw really across the country and across the world. Growth was very, very uneven. Even though the total industry within the U.S. did quite well, the domestic performance and the international performance, again, was very uneven. Now, IRI showed a 16% volume growth rate from off-premise. We had something very similar from a report we do with our member companies that showed off-premise sales were up by 18%. Unfortunately, that was offset by very, very weak on-premise sales. No big surprise, if you close all the bars and restaurants, those on-premise sales are going to be down, and they were down dramatically. They're down by 44% across the entire year. Now, clearly this impacts the hospitality industry in a very negative way. Even though you started to see some jobs in the restaurant industry come back toward the end of the year, we're still down by 2.3 million jobs versus where we were at the beginning of 2020. Additionally, as Sonnet mentioned, the craft distillers got hit very, very hard. She noted that where most craft distillers, they generate between 20 and 80% of their business through their tasting rooms, many of which were closed. We recently did a survey with the American Distilling Institute where we asked the distillers in the last couple of weeks, okay, what was the net impact in 2020? 36% of craft distillers reported that their sales were down for the year by 25% or more. That's not just through their tasting rooms, but their total sales. Now, obviously, no business can afford to lose 25% of its sales. It's even more difficult when you're a small business like a craft distiller. Now, even though here in the United States, we saw very rapid sales growth for distilled spirits, that was not the case internationally. And in fact, when you look at international sales for a lot of the major corporations, even accounting for the rapid growth in U.S. sales, their total sales were down by an average of 8 to 9%. So the international markets were very, very weak. One of the big hurdles that they had to overcome, or unfortunately were unable to overcome, has to do with their market structure. In international markets, you tend to see 50% of the sales coming through off-premise outlets and 50% through on-premise outlets. Well, if 50% of your business is through on-premise outlets and those outlets are closed, it makes it that much more difficult to grow your off-premise sales enough to overcome the losses in the on-premise channels. Additionally, another area clearly of weakness was in global travel retail. Global travel retail typically accounts for 1%, 2%, 3%, 4% of a company's business. So it's a relatively important business channel. Well, nobody was traveling. So those sales went to almost zero. Clearly nobody was buying duty free. This also partially explains, so we really have two areas of substitution here. Many consumers were substituting on-premise sales in the U.S. for off-premise sales. Additionally, a lot of Americans who previously would have been buying, making a certain number of purchases through duty-free stores were not. So a lot of those sales got shifted into the off-premise channels as well. So ultimately, when we looked across total beverage alcohol for the year, even though there were some amazing growth rates reported, they all focused on the off-premise. When you look at total beverage alcohol across all channels, wine had a very good year. They were up around 4.9% in volume terms. We were up 5.3%. But beer was only up less than half a percentage point, according to really the best number that I can find. And that includes the rapid growth that we actually saw from the hard seltzers. So on net, total beverage alcohol volumes were only up about 3 percentage points for the year. Next slide. Now let me talk about what some of the growth drivers were here in the U.S. market. As I mentioned, internationally, they were at a bit of a disadvantage because such a high percentage of their sales came through on-premise channels, which were closed. Here in the U.S., the breakdown, even pre-COVID, was 80-20. So 80% of sales volumes come through off-premise sales channels, you know, grocery stores, package stores, and whatnot. This allowed this the large percentage of our sales that go through off-premise allowed us to soften the impact from the on-premise closing. Now, obviously, having bars and restaurants closed and consumers not making purchases in those channels meant that I estimated consumers had an extra $20 billion to spend in the off-premise channels. Now, when you include the fact that, well, in addition to not spending on spirits in bars and restaurants, they weren't out, they weren't dining out, we weren't traveling nearly as much, this gave the consumer a lot of disposable income if you were fortunate enough to still have a job, of course. Now, additionally, Americans are really accustomed to in-home entertaining. There are a lot of people who have elaborate rec rooms. A lot of people have in-home bars. So it wasn't much of a stretch for Americans to move a large percentage of their entertaining in-home. You know, we saw a lot of people that were stocking up, I mentioned. Well, a lot of that was people stocking up their in-home bars. You know, there are a lot of folks that said, all right, I can't go to my favorite restaurant anymore and have my, longtime bartender friend fix my favorite cocktail. Let me try to do that at home. So we saw a lot of people experimenting. This led partially to a lot of folks buying brands they typically would not have purchased. And really stocking up on their in-home bars. Now, you have to realize spirits, unlike beer, have an almost infinite shelf life. So when you go out to buy, you really weren't necessarily concerned about, is this going to spoil? A lot of what we purchased this year, probably will not be consumed sometime until 2021 or maybe even 2022. We all have that special bottle that we keep for special occasions, or perhaps it's a liqueur that we only lose in certain drinks. So some of those bottles will be around for some time. And then finally, something else that really helped, and Christine alluded to this, we saw a lot of growth in online and home delivery. Many of these services didn't exist 5 years ago, but it really made buying spirits that much more convenient for the typical consumer. Next slide. Let me now turn to some category highlights. Now, I want to say we're only touching on a few categories. You all will have available to you our support tables where all the information that you're accustomed to getting will be. So if there's a category you have a question about, don't worry, we're going to provide you with that information. But we're just going to highlight a few categories here. Obviously, one of the big stars of the show again this year was the American whiskey category, and that includes bourbon, Tennessee, rye whiskey, whites, and to a certain extent, the developing American single malt market. Volumes for all American whiskeys are up 7% in 2020 to about 28.4 million 9-liter cases. Revenues grew even faster to about 8.2%, meaning the category accounts for about $4.3 billion in industry supplier revenues. We saw strength across all price points, particularly in the super premium price points. A lot of that has been driven by the variety that Americans now have to choose from. You have a lot of traditional brands are doing special bottled offerings. They're doing a lot of special casks and whatnot. Most of those brands tend to be in the super premium price point, which allowed super premium to grow by over 17.4 points in 2020.
David, if I can jump in very quickly to provide a craft perspective on this. This sounds wonderful in the sense that there have been increases. However, if you think about craft brands, when Koval started around 13 years ago, there were only under 25 distilled spirits plants in the United States. Now there are over 2,000. Many of those represent small craft distilleries, small medium craft distilleries that are spread out all over the United States, helping the local economic situation of whatever town they are in by providing jobs that span various degrees of preparation for the position. There are different kinds of jobs offered. We are working with local agriculture across the country. Many of these craft distilleries are, and increasing the amount of grains that are being processed and made into whiskey. But at the same time, you know, while we have been a real force in local manufacturing, and have been able to provide great jobs and have been a real boom, I think, for the United States and for this whole industry. Right now, we are definitely suffering. And I feel that while there are increases in these categories in general, as you present, for craft brands that do not have the marketing dollars and do not have the thrust behind them that some larger brands have, we have definitely been dramatically impacted and have suffered. And if, you know, you think about how impactful that is, I can sort of turn this around and talk about one of the quick positives that I know will be addressed later is that you only saw how important the craft brands were to the United States of America in the power that we have in our local economies and our local and the states that we are in when we were the solution you didn't know you had until we were there to make hand sanitizer for our communities. And that shows you the importance of local manufacturing on the local economies and also on the local supply chain. And that cannot be underestimated. And right now, we were able to create a web of manufacturing all across the United States with distilleries from the tops of Oregon to the tops of Maine, all the way down to the bottom of Texas, to Chicago, to the cities. And this has been an amazing development over the last decade in craft distilling. And I think that we need to engage in these measures that you mentioned earlier so that the craft sector can also see numbers like this that you've just presented.
Thank you very much, Sonnet. Clearly, small businesses in the United States have always been a big economic driver, and the craft industry is no different, a very important part of our local communities. One other area that grew rapidly, one subcategory of in American whiskey was rye, has been growing nicely for a number of years now. Volumes were up to about 1.4 million cases. Revenues grew by 16.9%. The rye category is really fascinating to me. When I joined the Distilled Spirits Council in early 2000, rye numbers were so low that we almost dropped it as a category altogether. So a really good news story about rye whiskey. Next slide. Cognac. Clearly, cognac is a luxury item. It fits nicely into the buying patterns that we saw amongst U.S. Consumers in 2020. Volumes were up 18.7 percentage points to about 7.9 million cases. Revenues were up even faster, 21% to about $2.4 billion in supplier revenues. And obviously, cognacs tend to skew toward high-end and super premium. So when you have rapid volume growth, you're going to expect rapid revenue growth from them as well. Next slide. Tequila and Mezcal was another star of the show. Looking at the total category, volumes are up a phenomenal 10.2 percentage points. That's very rapid growth for a category the size of tequila, 22.2 million cases. Revenues are up even faster because, again, a lot of that growth was in high-end and super premium brands. They grew by 17.4% and now account for about $4 billion in supplier revenues. Now, a subcategory in tequila mezcal, obviously, is mezcal, kind of tequila's smoky cousin. Both volumes and revenues were up 18 percentage points in 2020. So we saw rapid growth in the mezcal category as well. Next slide. Single malt scotch. Now, Christine touched upon the fact that imports of single malt scotch have been down fairly dramatically. And, you know, that is consistent with what we saw in supplier shipments. Volumes were down by 6.5 percentage points to 2.4 million 9-liter cases. Revenues were also down by about 2.1 percentage points. Let's put this into context. Single malt scotch, along with cordials, were the only two categories that were down in 2020. In the previous 10 years, when we looked at the compounded average annual growth rate, volumes grew at a 7.8% growth rate, and revenues grew at 10.7%. So clearly, reversing those numbers in 2020 means that we really saw a direct impact from the retaliatory tariffs. The import numbers showed up, and the numbers in terms of shipments showed up in a big, big way. Next slide, please. Now, another real driver was premixed cocktails. In fact, volumes were up by 35.1 percentage points to about 8.4 million 9-liter cases. Revenues were up even faster at 39%, accounting for just under $500 million in supplier revenues. Now, it's incredible to think that even though premixed cocktails only account for about 2.6% of total industry volume, they accounted for 17% of industry growth in 2020. So it's really a good news story. This was driven by two different factors. One, obviously, you had a lot of people, even though a lot of people wanted to play in-home bartender, well, we're all not that adventuresome. And so the idea of being able to make buy a premixed, whether it was a Manhattan or a margarita, was very appealing to a lot of folks. That was partially driving the increase. Secondarily, and it's something I'll talk about here in a minute, is the expansion of the ready-to-drink market, which is really, when you get down to it, a premixed cocktail. Now, ready-to-drink is, as it indicates, it's something that you would drink right out of the can or bottle. These tend to be sold in, these are sold in single-serving sizes. So it's something that really competes directly directly with single-serving beers. Next slide. Now, we're expecting big, we think that there's huge potential for a spirits-based ready-to-drink market in the U.S., and the Canadian experience is very, very instructive. Up in Canada a few years ago, they looked at the ready-to-drink market and said, hey, you know what? Let's give these spirits-based products an even playing field with beer and wine. So a lot of that had to do with reducing the rate of taxation or applying a more appropriate level of taxation, shall I say. So what they did is they said, you know what? Alcohol, the source of alcohol should not matter. So let's create a special spirits-based refreshment tax for any spirit being sold at 7% ABV or less. Now, they made a number of other changes that made spirits-based ready-to-drink products that much more appealing for the average consumer and on a public policy level. As a result, as you can see, the blue line represents case sales of RTDs in Canada versus case sales of traditional spirits. In 2020, for the first time, their ready-to-drink spirits-based RTDs actually exceeded traditional spirits in Canada. Now, a couple things to point out. Why don't we go to the next slide? As I mentioned, in the U.S., these products are rapidly developing. And as you can see, and this is just, I mean, you can only fit so many pictures on a slide. Now, this is a few of the products that you see. You'll notice that they're quality products being sold at reasonable prices in single serving cans. You'll recognize many of the names on the slide. But in Canada, what's happened is as a result of a putting spirits-based RTDs in a more level playing field, you now have over 100 manufacturers stepping into the marketplace, offering, I believe it's over 550 various brands and line extensions. And they're not just vodka. They include whiskeys, they include tequila, they include rum. So it's really giving the consumer a lot of choice. Want to go to the next slide? Now, so those spirits-based RTDs, as I mentioned, help drive the 35% growth rate that we saw. But more importantly, when we looked at the marketplace, that growth is not coming from traditional spirits. It's coming from beer. It's coming from flavorful malt beverage products. It's coming from wine. It's coming from cider. So there's no impact on spirits. In fact, when we looked at Canada, beer volumes in Canada are actually falling faster than they are in the U.S. So it's obvious, you know, even though you see rapid growth in Canada in spirits-based RTDs, their traditional spirits are growing nicely as well. So it's interesting when we look at this marketplace, we often include hard seltzers in the beer category. But when AC Nielsen did a survey recently, they talked to the consumer, and 60% of consumers really consider these products their own market. Fewer than 10% said that they should be part of the beer market. So as I noted, we're seeing a widely developing market for spirits-based RTDs. Public policy will drive a lot of this. If we're able to get the same sort of favorable, if we're able to be put on the same public policy footing as other beverages, I think there's just huge market potential. In fact, in the U.S., if we were to reach the same level of growth, the same relationship with traditional spirits as the Canadians did, we would see 280 million cases sold in the U.S., valued at around $7 billion at the supplier level. So the potential here is just huge when you consider the fact that the total spirits market right now at the supplier level is only $31 billion. Next slide. And we're going to pause briefly for an advertisement. Let me talk about some coming attractions from the Discus's economics department. We talked a lot about super premium brands, and we realized a few months ago that, you know what, there's nobody out there consistently measuring just how well luxury spirits are doing. So using our brand data tool, we've created a luxury spirits index that's going to focus on bottles at typical retail for $50 or more. So we've developed separate indices for single malt scotch, cognac, American whiskeys, Irish whiskeys, Japanese whiskeys, and tequila. We hope to be releasing that quarterly, so look for that probably late March, early April. Additionally, over the years, we've always separated our price points by supplier price, and that works really well for a lot of people. I know, but there are a lot that have often asked us about, hey, you know, can we look at something by retail price? So recently, Discus worked with both IRI and AC Nielsen to create some retail price retail price points by product category. So we're going to start segmenting our data by retail price point as well. Now, I know for a lot of the stock analysts on the phone, you all have told me over the years that you use those tables by supplier price point. don't worry, they are not going away. This will be something that will augment what we have to offer. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Chris. Chris?
Great. Thank you, David. Okay, guys, we're almost done. Before we just hit some of the top line points on the summary, as Sonnet had mentioned, just to reflect on behalf of the Distilled Spirits Council, in the early days of the pandemic, we had on record over 865 distilleries around the country rising up to make hand sanitizer, in large part giving that hand sanitizer to emergency responders and hospitals. And it was a very proud moment for our industry because, as Sonnet mentioned, really the industry played a prominent role in the early days of the anxious times of the pandemic. So on behalf of Discus, great thanks to the leadership of all the distilleries around the country. And in addition to that, just want to highlight, obviously, responsibility.org, which is our industry foundation. We have been, monitoring the consumption of beverage alcohol, certainly during the pandemic. Look, we just want to recognize these are anxious times. Those who choose to drink need to be very, very aware of their relationship with alcohol, everything in moderation, of course. And we recognize some people shouldn't drink at all. So it's top of mind. Responsibility.org will be issuing an announcement next week because we're tracking beverage alcohol consumption patterns. And I'm pleased to report we haven't seen a rise in consumption of beverage alcohol in totality during the pandemic. And that's a good thing in terms of moderate consumption. So in summary, U.S. Spirit sales in 2020, supplier revenue was up by 7.7% and volume was up by 5.3%. The pandemic had an uneven impact across the industry for the U.S. hospitality industry. Craft distilleries' reliance on tasting room sales and tourism, as Sonnet had mentioned, it's very, very tough out there for them. But hopefully soon, with the vaccine, we'll be coming out of this. Retaliatory tariffs that has impacted our industry, it is really dampened a great American success story where there was great gravitation and momentum coming from Europe for American whiskey. And we hope, and this is a big, big priority for Discus, obviously, is to work with the Biden administration, work with the EU and our spirits partners in Europe to get these issues resolved as soon as possible. And then certainly we've seen at home entertaining, we've seen consumers use unused disposable income to gravitate to super premium products, which is great. And then certainly as we close, Discus is going to be focusing on those market modernizations that have taken place this year. And I think that's a big opportunity to provide an economic boost for the hospitality sector going forward. And as we close on the last slide, if you may have seen on Tuesday, we announced the creation of the Discus Academy for our industry. Building the workforce for the future is very, very imperative for our industry to continue to grow and prosper and contribute back to the economy and our communities and so forth. So we're very, very excited about the Discus Academy. And we think it's something that's going to really be a foundation that's going to benefit the greater industry for many, many years to come. And then in October 2021, God willing, we're going to have our annual conference in Austin, Texas, October 6th through the 8th. We're hoping and banking on by that time the vaccines will be out and we'll be kind of in the early days of coming out of this pandemic. So we're very, very excited about the second annual conference for Discus. So with that, Leslie, we'll turn it over to Q&A.
Yep, let me open it up for everybody. The first question is from Dan Schofield, and I think it's probably for David. Do you foresee any TTB notice of proposed rule changes on anything in 2021?
Actually, Christine, do you want to take that?
We could. I'll jump in. We could potentially see another rulemaking on on labeling and so forth. Obviously, DISCUS works very, very closely with TTB. They came out with a variety of rulemakings over the last 6 months. And TTB, I'd like to just call them out. They have been terrific in being very, very supportive of the craft distiller industry, particularly in the support of the hand sanitizer effort and so forth. So DISCUS works very, very closely with TTB and will continue to do that. They have really risen up. And even though they have an important regulatory role for the industry, they've been very, very instrumental in helping the industry keep our head above water.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chris. Are there any top line comments to the team that can make about tariffs and COVID impact on craft spirit imports into the U.S.? And do the trends follow the broader category impact?
Christine or David?
Why don't I take that? I mean, I think it was pretty clear from the data that Christine presented that, yes, the tariffs had a negative impact, particularly on single malt scotch. We saw those volumes decline, but then we also saw that carry over into the shipment data, which was actually being shipped out to the wholesalers in the U.S. We saw that pattern in single malt scotch, and then we saw that pattern in cordials as well. I don't know, Christine, if you want to have anything to add?
I guess I would just say, I think similar to what Sonnet reported about the impact of the tariffs on craft distillers across the United States, you know, many craft distillers were suddenly basically cut off from the EU market and now the UK market, since they're separate, because of the tariffs. And we're seeing the same thing with small Scotch whiskey producers who are now cut off from the US market because of the tariffs. So we're seeing, you know, the same situation happen with small distillers on both sides of the Atlantic. Obviously different products, but the same impact because of the imposition of tariffs.
Economics works the same no matter where you live.
Great, thank you all. A question from Peter. What are your thoughts on new or additional taxes on distilled spirits?
I would just jump in and say, obviously, with many states suffering from state budget deficits due to the pandemic, it's top of mind for us. We have seen in the early days of the 2021 legislative sessions that a few states are starting to consider that. In that, our main point there is, and obviously we'll be very, very aggressive in our advocacy efforts through Spirits United, which is our grassroots platform, is, and now would be the worst time than ever to impose a tax on the hospitality industry. You know, that would have, as the tariffs have had an impact on our industry, tax increases would do the same thing, not only on craft distillers and the U.S. distilled spirits industry, but on restaurant and bars, right? We all want to help and see those restaurant and bars recover because they play a significant role in local economies as well. And tax increases would just have a big impact. But anytime there's rising state budget deficits, it's always going to be a threat. And certainly DISCUS is going to be on point taking that on if need be.
Great, thank you. Blake Gray is asking, can you please define the categories starting with super premium?
You know, we actually, we do have as part of the handout, the supplemental tables, we show which brands fall into the various categories. It really varies by product category, because obviously what constitutes a super premium vodka price-wise is not going to, constitute a single malt scotch. So let me refer you to the supplemental tables where you'll see both where the price point breaks are, and it will give you some examples of brands that fall into those price points.
Great, thank you. I think we have time for about three more. Mark Gillespie is asking, can you give us any indication of how the new Biden administration views the beverage alcohol industry and whether there may be any support from the anti-alcohol movement?
I'll jump in, and maybe Christine can, and great question, Mark. Look, you know, the Biden administration's focus number one, two, and three is to get us out of the pandemic, right? So, look, we are really excited about President Biden's public comments that he's made about resetting the relationship with the EU. We think this administration, obviously, or they're going to be focused on public health as they should. But we are really looking forward to working with this Congress and this administration, particularly to resolve the tariff issues. I think there's great opportunity ahead. And certainly there is advocacy groups out there that take a negative view towards the alcohol industry, and obviously we'll monitor that. I think the most important thing for our industry is always being on the front foot of responsibility. That's battling against drunk driving, underage drinking, which is at its lowest levels, and making sure that this industry represents itself in a way that always promotes moderate and responsible consumption. So if we continue to do that, I think great things are ahead for the industry, but that's something that this industry always has to be committed to, is high standards of responsibility. And it's a community effort.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Do you have any, from Rodri Morgan, do you have any figures relating to the number of U.S. bars that have had to close permanently in 2020? And have you any insights into the growth of tequila as a sector in the United States?
Well, certainly. Obviously, I'll take the last question first. Tequila has grown amazingly. Volumes are up 10.7% here in the U.S. Now, that was the tequila and mezcal category total, but obviously that's dominated by tequila. A lot of the growth was at the super premium price points. So it's now at, tequila is now a 22 million case category. When you look at American whiskey, which has been popular in the U.S. for a lot longer, it's at 28 million cases. You see that tequila has really developed nicely and it's rapidly growing. I have not looked at the number. I don't have data on the number of establishments that have actually closed, but we'd be happy to look into that for you.
The one thing I would say about that is we work very, very closely with the American Beverage Licensees and in partnership with them. And as Christine has alluded to, one of our big priorities this year is really in conjunction with ABL, American Beverage Licensees, the National Restaurant Association, is to do all we can to support their economic recovery. That's critical for our industry, but it's critical for what needs to take place in the United States, right? Because all of those businesses play an instrumental role in all of our communities, and they're all in large part small businesses. So I think it's an incumbent upon all of us to help them. So order to go, utilize cocktails to go, because those are economic lifelines during these tough times.
And I just wanted to add one point on the tequila matter. In 2020, Mexico ranked as the number one country that we imported from. We imported $2.6 billion worth of spirits from Mexico, and that reflects a 42.4% increase relative to 2019. $2.3 billion of that was tequila alone. And within the tequila category broadly, $2 billion of that was bottled tequila. So those are obviously the higher end tequilas. So just to add on to the point about David and the growth of the tequila market, we saw that obviously in the import numbers as well.
Great. Another Brad Jaffe asks, what was the fastest growing category year over year from 2019 to 2020?
Well, it was clearly pre-mixed cocktails. The category is up 35%. Now it's growing from a much smaller base, but as I mentioned, it really benefited from two trends. One, the fact that so many people, that a lot of the bars or restaurants were closed and people moved to at-home entertaining. And it also benefited from the fact that we now have a rapidly developing spirits-based RTD market here in the U.S. with a lot of wonderful products coming onto the market for the consumer to enjoy. You know, everything is about consumer convenience and, premixed cocktails exemplify consumer convenience.
Thanks, David. And then the last one, and we can follow up. There's a few more in here. There's an anonymous one. So if that person could follow up directly with us, we'd appreciate that. But the last one is, I don't think we got Dan's full answer. Dan asked, what impact do you anticipate with the new bottle size standard on imports and exports?
Look, I say, you know, DISCUS engaged with TTB during that public comment period. Certainly, it does create some new market opportunities, but a regulated market is important. And I think it's going to create some opportunities for the industry. And, we're going to be following those developments very, very closely. Christine or David?
Yeah, I mean, Christine, you want to go?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, it'll just make it easier, I think, on both the import and export side, to have those additional sizes.
Yeah, and from a consumer convenience standpoint, obviously, if you have different bottle sizes, one of the big questions for a lot of retailers is, do I stock a particular brand? But B, how many bottle sizes do I stock? You know, not everybody, if 1.75 bottle sizes were very, very popular this year as consumers were stocking up at home. But, you know, if you've got a single malt scotch, you don't necessarily want to buy a full liter of it or even a 750 milliliter. So having various bottle sizes is important to the consumer as well. So, it's about consumer convenience as much as anything else.
Fair. And David, a follow-up to the one that Brad Jaffe asked. His question was, what was the fastest category? He's asking spirits category. So what was the fastest spirits category year over year from 2019 to 2020?
Oh, I believe it was tequila. We count pre-mixed cocktails as a spirits category. But I believe tequila at over 10%, but to be honest with you, I'd have to double check, and you can certainly get that answer out of the support tables that we're providing.
Certainly, David, American whiskey probably wasn't.
Well, it was up 7%. So in percentage terms, tequila was faster. And obviously, cognac was up 17%. So, that was faster still.
Strong as well.
All right. Any other last summary items from our panelists today as we close?
It's a good time to be a spirits consumer in the United States.
And again, on behalf of the Distilled Spirits Council, thank everybody for participating. Let's hope next year we'll be able to be together in New York and when it's safe, and we get the hospitality industry back up and running. Please don't hesitate to reach out to any of us at DISCUS to help. And a great thank you to Sonnet and Koval for participating in this as well. Keep doing the great work that y'all are doing in the Chicago area.
All right. Thank you, everybody.